la scena dell'arte sudafricana attraverso gli occhi di Minette Vari e Sue Williamson. Williamson e Vari sono due dei curatori di Punto Za, la mostra che da febbraio ad aprile 2008 ha portato la giovane arte sudafricana al Palazzo delle Papesse di Siena. In questa intervista parlano del sistema dell'arte, dei cambiamenti generazionali e dei giovani artisti che si sono formati dopo l'avvento della democrazia in Sudafrica. Parlano anche di ignoranza e pregiudizi. L'intervista è in inglese e le musiche che la legano sono pubblicate sotto Creative Commons dalla netlabel Comfort Stand.
Hello, my name is Minette Vari. I live in Johannesburg, South Africa. I'm an artist and this time curator.
And I'm Sue Williamson. I'm also an artist and I live in Cape Town. And I also write on contemporary art in South Africa. I'm the editor of a website called artthrob.co.za. And I'm very happy to be here in Siena and part of the curatorial team of this show. Well, I think in South Africa we're quite a small community of artists, so in fact I think I knew just about everybody who was on the show already. But Lorenzo contacted me through Artthrob, first of all, and he asked if Artthrob would be willing to do a collaboration with information about this show. So I responded, yes, of course, I thought it sounded like a really good show. Then he said, would I like to write an essay? And I said, I wouldn't be able to do that because I was just too busy already on deadline with a book that I'm writing. Then he said, well, didn't I have an essay I'd already done? So I thought about the subject of the show and the young artists, and I thought about an essay I wrote for a show in New York called Looking Both Ways, which was at the Museum of African Art in New York a few years ago. So I proposed that to Lorenzo and sent it to him, and he thought that would be fine. And then he said, well, would I like to also be one of the curators? So I said, well, I didn't think I could do that because I was too busy. It kept on, it was like a theme of being too busy. But what would it involve? So then Lorenzo explained to me I would have to select the artists and work with the work. When he mentioned the other people who were already involved, I thought, well, it's going to be a really good show. So yes, I would like to be involved.
I was contacted by him, I believe, in August sometime, and he was doing this project, and it sounded really intriguing. As a South African artist who has been shown on many group shows dealing with the theme of nationality and the new democracy in South Africa, I, as I think many of my contemporaries, have become really weary of being showcased in this way. So one gets to be really selective and careful about, you know, how one is represented in this kind of context, and things like geographical or identity fixations and that kind of theme. It can be very problematic. However, in this case, it seemed really interesting, and it was a good challenge in a way to be asked as an artist to curate other artists onto the show. Of course, he had introduced certain guidelines, such as they had to be of a certain age, younger. And that was challenging because suddenly one is confronted with the idea that, oh, you're not a young artist anymore. Not quite. And we have to move this on. But also it forces you to engage with the art world from where you come in a totally different way. I tend to work alone. I become quite hermit-like. I completely, you know, I withdraw into my cave. And, you know, years, weeks, or, you know, years, decades can go by. Anyway, I sound really old today saying these things. But it kind of forces you to come out and look around and really engage with what people are doing at the moment. And I wanted to present people with whom I hadn't ever had really the opportunity to work with much before, or young artists whose work is new even in our local context. However, it's a thing that moves pretty fast, so that, you know, if somebody's doing something interesting, the art world cottons on almost instantly, and that person can be catapulted to mini superstardom in a way fairly quickly. And to me, it's a dangerous phenomenon because it can present very young artists into situations which they, you know, might not be ready for, or they have an interesting body of work, but then what next?
The art market is very limited. There's not really a culture of collectors. I mean, some people collect a few things, but I mean, there's not a serious culture of collection. And so, in a sense, artists can't be driven by that. You know, I think the trouble very often in Europe and America is young artists will have a show and it'll be successful. Now there are certain collectors who are collecting those young artists. So they're kind of stuck to do whatever it is. That kind of, they can change a little bit, you know, but it's that kind of work they've got to make, and the collectors want to see them. The next show's got to be a little bit different, but not too different, so that they can identify that particular artist as a certain kind of artist, as it were, whereas we really don't have that.
Surely, you know, within your career, there are certain themes that you'll pursue and that will keep your work on a certain track, but there isn't that market pressure that compels you or forces you to do more of the same all the time.
You don't get kind of limited into one, you don't get locked into a box in the way that I think the market can lock you into a box as a young artist, where the system of collectors is more developed. It's not a collector-driven market, that's to sum it up, at all. It's the artists make what they want to do, and sometimes they're lucky and they sell something. Most of the time they're not particularly lucky and they scrounge around and make the next thing, and that's how it happens.
And it's a strange dynamic, but I was trying to pick artists whose work I think would work together well, you know, create an interesting dialogue between the different works. As a visual artist, you feel kind of implicated, so you really want your choices to be good. And I somehow found that I'm either very picky or just difficult, because I wanted something unusual and strong, and there's plenty of that. But then, you know, I was sensitive to how the artists that I chose would perform together as a group, and then within the wider group of the exhibition, and then, of course, then that as a representation of what's going on in young art in South Africa right now.
I've chose three women, not really because I was particularly looking for women artists, but I thought these three particular artists were just at a point where, in the case of Zanelli, her work is just becoming really well exposed all around the world. But I think that I didn't think it had been seen here in Italy too much. And in the case of the other two artists, Bridget Baker and Doreen Southwood, they're artists whose careers I've watched for quite a long time. I think they're probably about 10 years older than Zanelli. But they've both been sort of a little bit, I won't say stuck, but they haven't been quite as visible in the last couple of years as they had been in earlier years, and I thought that this was an opportunity. I knew they'd both been making good work for them to again come out into an international situation.
The process of choosing artworks or young artists was really not simple. Some came fairly easy. To me, James Webb was an immediate choice. I've always been interested in his soundscapes, in the environments that he creates, and the way he works with audio. Then I chose Nonsikilelo Veleko, a young photographer who is based in Johannesburg at the moment. But she has, you know, she's of Xhosa extraction, and she is almost a stranger in Johannesburg. She's very sensitive to the difference, cultural differences, and how she's seen and presented and perceived as a young female, a very flamboyant character as well, and often She, as she spoke with me, she has often been challenged with, why do you dress like that and why do you study art? It's not something that girls do. In her culture, you know, in challenging all these old preconceptions. And then I got Ismail Farouk on the show, and he stepped up to the opportunity so marvelously, and he calls himself an urban geographer, and he maps and follows and investigates the demographic changes in the urban environment of Johannesburg, and at the moment also concentrating on how the urban landscape is changing in preparation for the hosting of the 2010 Football World Cup. So that's very interesting because, in fact, you know, whole areas in Johannesburg that have completely collapsed in dismal, abject poverty are being revamped, but suddenly, and people are being evicted, of course, people who have been there illegally or occupying houses without paying rent. And it's very fascinating, and also the way he goes about it and using incredibly sharp and strong editing, like very, very vibey stuff, and often also collaborates with other artists or musicians to create, you know, to complete his works. So these were my three choices, and I'm delighted to have them. It all works out very, very well. It's, you know, it just brings something special. I think there are so many different work ethics present on the show, so many different visions and so many different ways of discovering new mediums. It's marvelous.
I think an interesting thing actually about the work in South Africa, if each of us had been given this list and said, you can't invite any of those, choose three more, we probably could have put together another good show. You know, there are just such a lot of good, there's so much good work going on. I think that there's just an intensity. People are very serious about their work. There's not much of an art market in South Africa. We don't, most of us, sell very much through the galleries. But people take it very seriously. They go to their studios in the morning and they work hard and they produce work.
Funding, you know, certain governments do get it right. Certain countries somehow, I think, find a way to sustain the arts in a way and really contribute to it. And in South Africa, it's such a fraught thing because before the democracy, there was, you know, a fair amount of government backing, but it was incredibly traditional, incredibly boring, and it also, you know, supported only white artists, really. It was really hard, I think, to fall outside of these narrow categories and still be able to be productive. But at the moment, we're in a situation where government seems to perceive its priorities to lie elsewhere. And that's fair enough because, you know, issues of housing and water and stuff are pressing and it's incredibly urgent. But at the same time, I think there is important time being wasted because the arts do keep a culture alive. It does galvanize people. It makes people think creatively. It makes people think differently about their situations. I think it forces people to consider other solutions to their problems. And it may be very mundane, normal problems. But I fear that at the moment the arts are being either, you know, pushed into the margins or then things such as crafts are being, you know, it's being conflated with art so that the whole thing is rolled into one fuzzy ball. And there is not really, that, as far as I can see, a lot of support for that kind of excellence.
I think that the official line on culture is that visual art, as we understand it, is somewhat elitist, good, but not necessarily to have to be supported by the government, and they would prefer to put their money into supporting artisans and craftsmen who can make a living out of it. So they will send large groups of craftspeople, say, to a show in Washington in the hope that that will create a market for South African crafts, which can create a home industry. And it's not that I think that's wrong. I think that's good, and I mean, I support that. But I think it's a pity that they don't realize that art is actually very important to the economy as well, and can bring an enormous boost to the economy. I mean, if you, our National Gallery, for instance, they've got a show up at the moment called Why Collect, in which they're publicly discussing their collection policy. And they have a notice up on the wall, which explains that their buying budget is 140,000 rand a year, which is about 14,000 euros. That is their budget for buying art in 1 year. Well, you have to ask yourself what you can buy for that money. So that what is happening is that so much good art is just going out of the country. We're sort of our patrimony. Nobody's got a really complete collection of all this exciting art that's going on in South Africa at the moment, and it's a shame.
And it also, it contributes to, you know, our continued isolation. There was a certain kind of isolation during apartheid, which was as a result of the lunatic policies of the government and the world vehemently wanting change and then therefore, you know, cutting South Africa out of the picture, basically, to force change. Now, that isolation is, it's continued, but the character of it is different because I think post-apartheid, South Africa has become paranoid of, you know, the presence of Western pressures and the Western way of doing things, the European way of doing things. So there's now this almost this paranoia about not allowing that way of working and those values back into normal life, and it's very difficult to work within that. It has as a result, for instance, that although crafts and things from South Africa is being shown worldwide, there is no real incentive for bringing international art to South Africa. So young artists and, well, old artists and people who visit museums, and there isn't much because there isn't much of a museum culture, they do not get the opportunity to see important artists from elsewhere in the world, from Europe, from North America, from South America. And it's very hard. It's rare to find that. We've recently had Africa Remix come to South Africa, which presented a large amount of artists from the diaspora and from Africa. And that was an important show, but it was made into such a big thing, and precisely because, in contrast to anything else that happens in South Africa, it was phenomenal. It was massively important to have that show there, but it's at the same time incredibly sad that it has to be such an exception to the rule.
That's the BS beat.
I think that artists, by nature, artists are somewhat nomadic and move around, and I think that's fine, but it's a very, very difficult question because your own community does not support you. I think, let me put it this way, I think it's good to move around, to experience something somewhere else, and some people move away and they stay there permanently, like Candice Brights, who's now working out of Berlin, and her work really has nothing to do with her background of living in South Africa, but even Candice will say that because people see that she's white, middle class, they think that she has exactly the same values as they would have being European or American, but she doesn't. She feels different because she grew up in South Africa. It does give you a different perspective. But then other artists, one of our finest early artists, somebody like Paul Stopforth, who did some of the most important and compelling work in the 70s and 80s. I looked up his website this week just to see what he was doing, and I was completely horrified to see that he's now doing kind of rather decorative paintings of baobab trees and little springbok. I couldn't actually believe it. I felt so disappointed. And I met another artist recently who was also in my first book, Resistance Art, in Los Angeles, who was doing quite important sort of reconstructions of old colonial drawings. And he showed me his work. And again, I wanted to throw up. It was so bad. If you go away, then you have to face a new reality like Candice does. You can't keep reconstructing South Africa when you're living on another side of the world. Or you go away and you do something and you come back. So those are the choices that you have to make.
As an artist, I think you are responsive to your environment, whatever that is. Yes, you come from a certain place, you have a certain background, you have a certain education, certain values have been hammered into you through, you know, family life or schooling or whatever. And these are things that everybody in the world has them. And you carry this with you wherever you go. So it will always tinge your perspective somewhat. You will always have, you know, those echoes of this kind of background. So say, for instance, as a South African. But yes, if you go and live in Tokyo and you keep painting baobab trees, it's like being on a permanent fancy dress party. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel true. I think the arts have a unique ability to unpack the world, the values of the world, and the decisions that the world makes, and the events that happen within it in a specific way, in a way that is always new, always unprecedented, because it comes from a single perspective, mostly from, you know, the viewpoint of one person. And you have a very privileged entry into these realities from that singular perspective. Wherever it is that you go, this thing that you are doing can be applied to wherever you are. And I think that's what art should be doing. Wherever you are, unpack the world as it is then for you at that point. And I think that's what makes a lot of the young art coming from South Africa, or young South Africans, so particular and so strong. Because I think we do still come from a recent history of that kind of protest art, art that has to be at odds, out of the nature of what it is, has to be at odds with how things are. I think art will always take issue with the world, because that's what it does. It rearranges. It's an aggressive thing, eventually. If you work with found footage, for instance, you take. That act of appropriation is not a kind act. It's not polite. You know, it does. It takes. It cuts. It puts together again. And it will offend. It will make people uncomfortable, because it must.
I can see the white guilt and black accusations quite easily. That is clear, I think. And yes, I do think that there's quite a lot of that. Well, I mean, the point is that all of us, white and black, were in some way complicit in apartheid, because if you live under a system, you are a part of it. You may not want to be. You may even protest against it. You may protest against it quite radically, but you're still a part of it. And so that we all do carry that with us. If you're white, you're privileged. If you're black, you're not privileged. But, I mean, you could all have fought a little bit more. And, I mean, this is a question which is brought up very often. So, I mean, we're sort of carrying that same kind of baggage in a way. So, yes, I think that black accusations and white guilt. And then you've got the political correctness. Well, I mean, this is, for instance, a piece that Frances Goodman has taken head on this show by being as unpolitically correct as possible, if you like, in which she has had people say a lot of very racist, sexist, anti-Semitic things, phrases that people say amongst themselves when they think they're not being listened to. They say it to somebody who they think shares the same views as they do, that they can actually express themselves. And she's recorded these, and then she's put them in a place where you have to listen to them. And it's interesting that the piece was a sound piece, which was in a lift in the Goodman Gallery building in Cape Town, so that there were other companies who were using the lift as they went up and down to the Goodman Gallery, and they were forced to take it down because people found it very offensive. They didn't want to stand in the lift and listen to these insulting things, even though probably they'd get out of the lift and turn to their partner and say exactly the same thing that they just heard. They don't want to be identified as being in any way prejudiced. So yes, I do think that it's a common theme. I think that South African work does not lack courage. I think it's actually quite brave work. I think we do go out there and try to confront front reality. But I'd like to hear what Manette has to say.
Well, political correctness is the new turd on the landscape of any South African discourse. You know, it results from white guilt. It results from white guilt as a result of black accusations. It's funny that accusations and guilt, it's a reciprocal thing. It can build and contribute to each other. It's like puzzle pieces, that kind of call and response thing. Black accusation can exist without a black person in the room because it exists in the mind of the white guilt. You know, it exists behind all of that. And it's very hard. I mean, as an artist, when you have to work on some autonomous work, you are a single point in the universe. You have to go out and construct something, create some vision of the world. And coming from this kind of perspective, you know, working as a white artist, there's been very many episodes that have completely colored our working environment as South African artists and as white South African artists, I think. To be constantly aware of a certain kind of criticism that's going to come your way, especially in dealing with identity issues and the whole identity politics thing, that can go horribly wrong if you do the wrong thing. Now, the wrong thing, you see, is going into the territory of the politically correct or incorrect. Again, it's not the territory for mistakes. Mistakes don't have right or wrong, don't have really anything to stand on here, because it is all very subjective most of the time. But then again, that all of that is open to interpretation. So it's treacherous ground. And I think as an artist working sometimes with issues dealing with identity, one has to take note of that. It's something that you must be aware of, because it's going to come to you anyway via the critique or the response of your public. But you cannot let that paralyze you. And I find, sadly, that often South African artists do suffer from that kind of paralysis, where you're too scared to confront certain issues in your work because it will create shit for you. People will say terrible things about you. And also, by extension, if you create work that is perceived to be problematic in dealing with racial issues, then you suddenly a racist, and that's, you know, bad. It's incredible. We've created these psycho-political poltergeists that follow us around, and you're too scared to say something that will jar anybody else's feelings. Hopefully that will pass, and there are people, you know, one cannot afford in your own career to become a victim of this. It will make you weak, it will make your work weak, and next thing you will hate what you're doing. This phenomenon is being taken head on in areas such as, or cultural endeavors such as comedy. More and more, I'm happy to say. I think artists are a bit more anal, or a bit more shy, or a bit more careful, and lagging behind somewhat. Maybe also because it comes from a deeper place, so it hurts more. But although, I don't know. But there are many, you know, stand-up comedians, more and more black stand-up comedians, that are taking the stage and taking the piss out of, you know, the situation, white guys, Jewish guys, gay girls, and you name it. There's this whole thing of political satire, kind of make people complicit in that because it's so damn funny that, you know, and the moment you laugh, you're in it, you know, you're helping the process along. And that's lovely. It, you know, kind of it bypasses that whole sticky, awful process that I think often artists don't have immediate recourse to.
I believe that this nation should commit itself.
The lack of courage comes in to me where people are not able to kind of stand up to this complete force or this constant demand to be politically correct, to not offend anybody, to especially not appear to ever have been a willing part of apartheid. And face it, also in these younger generations, these were kids. The people whose work is on this exhibition, they were children during, you know, the final dissolution of apartheid. And yet, I can see sometimes in their work that kind of carefulness, that edginess, that awareness is there. And it's inherited. It's not even something that they were really part of, but it's present in their work. In the black artists, often you find a certain kind of aggression and anger and angst. That, yes, it's also got to do with being young and finding your way in the world, but it comes with baggage that has been inherited and passed on and passed down, and chips on shoulders are very much still there. And beyond all of this, you know, people being ground into standstill creatively because of these fears or these neuroses about the past, I think beyond that, there is definitely so much energy. There's so much work to be done. The country is nowhere near, you know, what people had hoped or expected it to be. And it's going to take so much longer than anybody had anticipated to get the situation into something that's equitable for everybody and that actually works. Often I find that South Africans have a way to translate their impatience into something creative and active. For instance, the power situation in South Africa at the moment, it's completely exasperating to try to work and the power goes out for 2.5 hours at random. And still I find that people find a way. It's, well, okay, we'll work with this then. We'll do something about this.
There's a feeling that we came through so much against all odds. We never thought. I mean, in the late 80s, it seemed obvious that apartheid couldn't go on forever. And yet at the same time, I personally could not imagine how it could ever end because the government had all the power, they had the money, they had the army. How was that going to change? How could it change? How could a transfer of power take place? And so the fact that it did is still so miraculous to me that I think, well, if we could come through that at a time when our friends were being jailed and you never could speak on the phone to your friends because you didn't know what was going to happen next, if we can come through all that and be where we are, you know, there's a feeling that you can kind of, we'll survive it and we'll work through it. Whatever's happening now, it can't be as bad as it was. I think we've sort of feel like we've walked through the fire. And when you've walked through the fire, a few little flames here and there, well, you'll just stomp on them and, you know, you'll do it. For instance, when the show that Minette was talking about, Africa Remix, went to London, some of the London reviews were reproduced in the local newspapers. And the comments were something like, well, this is all very interesting. Yes, it's from Africa, but it's not what we think of as contemporary art. And I see something of a kind of a colonial attitude in that from the British critics. They can't allow, Africa has to be stuck in this mold of doing traditional work, which involves, you know, an underlying masks and traditional culture, that sort of thing. And that if you do something else a little bit different, well, it's false, you're getting away from your traditional roots. I think that there's a lot of condescension and patronizing in those sorts of comments. But I mean, I found those reviews quite annoying. And I don't really see it in America, actually. It's more Britain and Europe, which seem determined to keep Africa in a particular colonial state.
Yeah, I think maybe there's a different attitude in America in terms of what is contemporary. North America, or, you know, the United States as a country, is even younger than South Africa as a country. So maybe there's that, because I have found sometimes the most awfully patronizing attitudes in Europe towards what is expected or what is coming from Africa, and then completely jarring with what had been expected.
There are certain key words that always come up, like Nelson Mandela, Bafana, Bafana, and those are the things that people know. And a lot of people don't even realize that South Africa is a country still. It's unbelievable. They think it means the southern half of the African continent. They don't think that South Africa is actually even a country. So we do find enormous ignorance. Or they say, oh, you must know so-and-so, they live in Nairobi. You know, there's very little sense of the actual geography of the country or what it is actually like to live there. And of course, it's not surprising. I mean, we all know exactly what it's like to live in America because everything that comes from America, all the culture, the magazines, television programs, image American life. But there's nothing which actually images daily life in South Africa for anybody to see on a regular basis. And we still get the things quite often, I'm sure Minette has it too, that I arrive somewhere and somebody's slightly surprised because I'm not black. Oh, you're a white artist. You know, oh, welcome.
Yes.
And sometimes a bit disappointed too. Or I have had work turned down when it's been discovered that I've been a white artist, not a black artist. That's happened as well. So, and there is this thing with curators coming in. They want a very, very careful mix of artists. It's got to be a certain number of black artists, a certain number of white artists. It's got to match the demographics of the country. And actually, most curators in South Africa, even curators like Bongi Dlomo, will say, listen, we don't work that way. You're giving us a theme. We're going to look at the theme. We're going to see which artists fit those themes. And I really don't want to stand here with a checklist saying how many artists are black, how many artists are white, how many women, how many men. You know, we're going to address the question, and that's what we're going to do. But I do think that people are quite excited by, and I think the thing about South African art is it's certainly increasing in interest. I think there is a growing sense of what it is. I mean, artists like William Kentridge and Kendall Gears and Robin Rhoda is another one, a performance artist. I don't know if you know his work, but he's getting big. Candice Bright has now become a very major artist. I think there are enough South African artists, Marlene Dumar, of course, you know, who've sort of have some kind of recognition on a world stage. And all that is a kind of a rub-off to the rest of us. It sort of filters down. And so I think there is more of a concept now, at least in art world circles, of what contemporary South African art is.
You know, I've arrived in certain places to show my work and been asked the question, why are you white? One can answer in various different ways, but how strange is that to have to confront such a question? And then, of course, you know, it's by implication, then it's not okay that you're white. You're not really African. And how are you African? How can now our concept of what African artists are like is completely shattered because you dare to arrive and you're white? It's not right. And it's hard because actually even on local turf, there is often this debate on what makes you African and who dares to call themselves African and yet be a white person. And then, you know, the ways in which people construct this for themselves differs widely. I'm African in as much as I was born there, and this is my home, this is all I know, and it's the culture in which I grew up. But then again, that breaks into separate fractals, because the culture is, there is no one culture, there are many. We have 11 official languages, which is just an indication. We don't have 11 languages, there are many more, but 11 official ones. So further is also the perception that your work should be about being African or not being African, being Afrikaans speaking, or English, or Zulu, or... So what languages do you speak? If it's not okay if you're not speaking a black language, then that's just further proof that you're a phony, you know? It's completely fraught. It's fraught outside of the country and inside of the country. I once had to present my work to a large group of school children visiting from Soweto, and it was completely delightful to explore all these themes and the whole thing of performative art and using your body, and of course the nudity was an added frisson in the conversation because of these young people's complete curiosity. And it was wonderful, but then it came to a point where, what is my identity really? Because some of these works did kind of touch upon such issues. And there was a definite a ripple through the audience when I posed it to them that I might be African, because clearly I'm not. You know, I'm white. How can I be African? So all of these questions are always present. And then it kind of spills over into what is expected of your work. How can you not be making work that is about politics or the transition between the system that we had into full democracy? How dare you make work that is not specifically addressing these issues? But as we go along, because we did grow up in a culture of protest art, or, you know, art that is employed as a reflection of the impetus for change and to be dealing with that. But, you know, it's very restrictive, finally, because, yes, although all of these things will probably forever be present in the work of many of my contemporaries, people and the world does move on. And maybe to a greater or lesser extent, the young artists on this show do not have to face that particular expectation anymore. And pressures are changing, and, you know, the expectations towards what they might be exploring are not that restrictive anymore. And I think for all of that, that's a good lesson to, you know, one can move on. The world is really changing in very radical ways. Although questions of personal identity and geography, you know, geographic position, will always be part of us because we are three-dimensional beings and you are where you are. You know, you can't be. At the same time, we have extended the powers of our senses and our reach intellectually so much by the World Wide Web, or, you know, you can actually be global at the same time as being local. You can reach out and your words can have immediate effect on the other side of the world. And I think people growing up in this new culture, to them, they don't perceive these things, you know, being in a certain place and time as restrictive as they used to be to older generations of artists. And it's changing the way people work, the way people see what is possible through new media work or working with a webcam, images being immediately available, tiny pixelated images suddenly being aestheticized into, you know, it's not a bad thing anymore to have a hugely pixelated image. It's just a function of that technology. In a way, it becomes kind of cool. It's a mark of having the privilege or the ability to engage in those technologies. And that's not something that is specific to Europe or anything. You know, everybody could have access to it. And in a way, I think what's interesting is that Europe has changed hugely in the last, say, let's take the last 12 years since South Africa has had democracy. At the same time, you know, the boundaries in Europe have come down. The currency is now one currency. There is huge issues about the migration of people. There's huge, you know, the increasing importance of things like Islam, the freedoms of people, the religious freedoms, and in which way these things can pervert or be perverted. And these are issues that, you know, makes life everywhere kind of volatile. And we all share that kind of unease, dis-ease that has characterized much of South African art.
They're on the moon. Think about it.
Radio Papesse è un progetto di Ilaria Gadens, Carola Haupt e Cristiano Maggi.